I'll ask our marshal to call court to order, please.
Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Connolly, Judge Bradfold, the Honorable Renee Werke presiding.
Good morning, everyone. We are appearing by Zoom platform this morning, April 11th, for our last hearing for today's Zoom. I'm going to remind the attorneys that, as I understand, there's no splitting of time. With that said, the attorneys will each have 15 minutes to present your case. 5 minutes is reserved to appellant counsel if you choose to use that for rebuttal purposes. A reminder to please state your name and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your remarks. I would also like to remind everyone that there is an audio version of this available after the fact. There's no other taping that's recorded during a Zoom presentation by in front of the Court of Appeals. Is there any questions at all, attorneys? It appears not.
No, Your Honor.
With that said, I'll ask our marshal to call the case for consideration.
Calling case number A221534, Mass versus County of Fillmore and Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Mr. Lipford, you are ready to go whenever you decide you're ready to go.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Brian Lipford. I work for Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services, and I represent the Swartz and Truber Amish appellants in this case. In Wisconsin v. Yoder, the U.S. Supreme Court observed the Amish live a simple life that has not changed in fundamentals for centuries. The same can be said of the Amish appellants in this case. They too live a simple agrarian life, which has not changed in fundamentals for centuries. They first established a settlement in Fillmore County almost 50 years ago, in 1974. Since that time, there's been no evidence that their traditional way of life and time-honored traditions have caused any harm to anyone in Fillmore County. Yet the government says they must conform to the world by installing septic tanks for the disposal of gray water. The government sought compliance through administrative penalty orders, threats of criminal sanctions, and a counterclaim to this action seeking a court order to destroy their homes.
Mr. Lipford, how long has the gray water from the Amish been discharged going, you know, from the time, I guess, that the MPCA in Fillmore County woke up and thought this was a problem? I mean, how long is it being discharged, and is it still being discharged now, or what's going on?
So essentially what they've traditionally done is discharge their gray water through street pipes. And the government was fine with that up until, I believe it was approximately 2010, when they started enforcement actions trying to force them to install septic tanks. And so that was the history. There was at least a 40-year period of time.
From 2010 to now, is gray water being discharged, you know, into the ground outside of these people's farms?
Well, the appellants in this case are using mulch basins to dispose of their gray water.
Mr. Connolly or Judge Connolly, if you're
yes, finished, go ahead, Judge Werke.
I just want to make sure we have this framed up properly as far as what we're addressing today. As I understood it, the challenge under the Minnesota Constitution was not a part of your SCOTUS petition. And I also understand that you're not arguing under the free exercise clause of the United States Constitution. Is that correct? It's in your brief, and I just want to make sure we're hitting this correctly, that your argument is actually a violation of the religious land use purpose.
We actually, after the case was, certiorari was granted and those cases vacated and remanded, we did reassert all three claims on remand, and the district court issued an order on all three claims. And so we're asking for a decision on all three claims.
But if there's a remand that came from the United States Supreme Court and had to do with the religious land use issue, if that's what it was on remand, how do we expand it? Do we have the authority to do that because the district court did?
You do, I think, because the district court did, and the same arguments that the government raised in their briefing, they raised before the district court. And I think
under the statute, is it the same test this sort of three-part test. So, okay.
It is the same test, and the district court said that it used the same analysis. So there's really no prejudice at the government at all for issuing a decision on all three claims.
Would you concede, Mr. Lidford, just because there hasn't been a problem yet doesn't vitiate the government's public health issue interest? You know, I mean, why wait for cholera to break out if you can stop cholera from breaking out, right?
Well, the short answer is they've been doing this for 50 years. And so the government, at a minimum, has to show that what they're doing
is causing. Well, maybe they've been lucky for 50 years. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, I do find somewhat meritorious the government's argument that just because there hasn't been, you know, a health issue yet doesn't mean they shouldn't take action to make sure there isn't a health issue. Why am I wrong, Mr. Lipford?
I think you're wrong because there's been the longstanding history of them not proving, or I guess they're not being any problems. And I think the longer answer is the government cites to dicta to Sherbert and Wilkinson. And there's three Supreme Court cases that support the premise that in order to satisfy strict scrutiny, the government must prove harm. First, the Supreme Court made clear in Consolidated Edison, which is on page 10 of our reply brief, that speculation of, quote, speculation of harm does not constitute a compelling state interest. Because there's no harm, I guess, being proven by the government being caused by the Amish, the district court's relying solely on speculation of harm. And I think it's important to note that the factual record of the case, there is an admission that there's been no harm caused by the Amish in the 50-year presence. And also that there hasn't been a single case of disease transmission through gray water anytime, anywhere. And so the second case I think that's on point is Brown v. Entertainment Group. And in Brown, the government sought to limit the sale of violent video games to minors. The U.S. Supreme Court found that the government didn't have a compelling interest in preventing psychological or neurological harm to minors because the government couldn't, quote, cannot show a direct causal link between violent video games and harm to minors. And so the government must show a direct causal link between the harm. And so they were going to have to show, which they didn't, that people can get sick from gray water contact. And finally, the third case, I think that's important for the court. So
Mr. Lepper, just to make sure I understand, because I might not be, you're arguing that the government needs to show a link, a harm specific to the Amish release of gray water, correct?
Correct. And then
you're not talking about gray water generally. It seems that the government did offer some significant evidence regarding the public health hazard and pollution concerns involving gray water generally.
And I think that's a point of the legal error that the district court made.
I understood it. If you wouldn't mind, I'd love to have you go back a moment to some earlier questioning by Judge Connolly, and it involved what the current state of waste disposal is on the appellant's properties. It's described in the respondent's brief, and I might have missed your counter discussion on that, as well as there's a lot of record evidence. So I just want to make sure I understand. You mentioned that all of the appellants are currently using a mulch-based system. But I also see in the respondent's brief a description of at least two of the appellants having compliant SSTS systems. Does that mean that they have septic tanks in place on two of the appellant's properties?
It is. Those would be Ammon, Schwarzentruber, and Amos Mast.
All right, so help me understand how that fits with your analysis. So you're still asking for an accommodation. Those are what, temporary or?
What we're asking is for the case to be reversed and the finding that there's no compelling interest in the government forcing the individuals to install septic tanks.
The appellants would remove the tanks? I mean, I'm just trying to understand what the relief is that you're looking for.
Well, that would be up to those particular appellants that they chose to install a mulch base. And I think the case, what we're asking for is the case to be reversed. And I think that there's perfectly fine for this court to say that there's nothing in the court order that would prevent the court from imposing further regulations on the Amish, because the Amish are more than willing to comply with inspections, with soil testing, with setbacks, with maintenance requirements. And I think
what so Amish I want to make is, Mr. Lepford, so that's on page 34 of your brief. I want to make sure I absolutely understand that. Are you telling us that if mulch basins are an alternative, and maybe they don't work as great as they should work, but you would be prepared, your clients, even the people who don't have septic systems, would be prepared to do all those things and agree to do them, you know, have the soil tested, do everything they have to do to make these mulch basins acceptable to the government?
Absolutely. And they're not afraid of the hard work. They're a hardworking group. So,
you know, I'm sure they would, if it was within their religion, you know, pound the testing materials in themselves. But, you know, that's another issue. The two people you mentioned, are they, I don't know what the right word is, they're not as conservative Amish as the other people who don't have the septic systems?
They are members of the Middle Canton or the original Canton Church, which there was testimony at trial that they're the most conservative of the groups in Fillmore County. That there's really a total of six churches. They're the most conservative church, and then there's a group of five that are slightly less conservative, to use that term or tradition.
Mr. Lippert, how did everybody come up with this 100 gallons a day estimate? I didn't see a lot. I mean, it's like all of a sudden the ordinance is there and everyone kind of had a gentleman's agreement that it's 100 gallons, but I don't really understand where's their support for, well, actually how much these people are actually using in the record. And I mean, whether it's 100 gallons or more than 100 gallons.
That's an estimate that the government uses in its ordinance.
The Amish say it's 100 gallons?
The government says it's 100 gallons. And that's part of the problem with the analysis, is that they're relying on speculation, which Fulton makes clear that you can't rely on speculation. And so the government is saying that they believe that the Amish are using 100 gallons per day. We attempted the best we could to estimate their own. We have the testimony from Amos Mass that he estimates that he's using about 30 gallons a day.
He did say he was just guessing. So we don't really have any refined figures. Nobody's went out and actually measured that.
Measured that. And that's part of the problem, that there's no specific evidence.
I could follow up quickly on that question about any information supporting the amount of use. We do have the 1,000 gallon cisterns. And is it at all four appellants locations or is it just one?
I believe there's testimony to one, but again, that was a shared cistern with other properties, and not to mention this, the idea that a cistern, there's water that's being used that isn't for gray water, watering, you know, drinking for livestock. They're drinking water, using water for irrigation.
Right. Absolutely. This is a cistern that's holding, usable water. Correct. Yes, I understand that. But I guess that the argument I think that was made in the respondent's brief had to do with the emptying of the cistern. So if the 1,000 gallons are emptied in a day, that would suggest that that's the quantity of gray water that's being disposed of.
And the point I would make is that there's water being used for reasons other than gray water. You're feeding horses and cattle, and they're drinking the water. Also, watering a garden, that's not water that's creating gray water. And so that's a fundamental problem of this case. Is one of the holdings of Fulton is you can't rely on speculation. And as to the volume, it's completely based upon speculation.
One of the arguments that respondents make, and it's a minor one, but I'd like to make sure I understand your answer, has to do with your reliance on some of the COVID cases that the U.S. Supreme Court decided. And the point that is made is that those cases are different. Every case is different. Those cases are different. They were done on an expedited basis. The record wasn't nearly as detailed as the ones that we have in this particular case. And so the analysis is perhaps not the same as what we should apply in this case. So how do you respond to that?
Well, I think guidance from the United States Supreme Court is guidance. And I agree, those were on the shadow docket. And so the court must take that into consideration. The point is, though, that the government's, or at least the district court's analysis was reducing risk was a compelling state interest. And I think if you look at the COVID cases, if that was a compelling state interest, the government would have prevailed in every single one of the COVID cases. Certainly restricting religious worship to Zoom-based services with everyone at home reduces the risk of COVID. But the government lost in those cases. And there's at least four of those cases that went up before the United States Supreme Court, and the religious claimants prevailed again, 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 and again. And all four of
them. Maybe I misunderstood your point, counsel. You know, I thought that your emphasis in those cases, the government, the court's analysis turned on whether actual harm had occurred to force the change for the government to insist on changes in protocol at in-person services. Am I wrong about that?
No, and that's another point that I would make is that they didn't prove harm. And if I could just finish the answer, I realize I'm out of time.
Mr. Lipford, go ahead.
Thank you. They found dispositive in the Archdiocese of Brooklyn case that there hadn't been an outbreak within several weeks or months, I believe. And here you're dealing with a situation where you've got a 50-year history.
Thank you, Mr. Lipford. You will have rebuttal time. We'll turn to you, Ms. Brown.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Christina Brown. I'm appearing today on behalf of the Minnesota.
You're coming across, at least to me, you're coming across not very clearly. Could you move closer to your microphone or possibly even move away from your microphone?
Does this help, Your Honor? Is this better?
That's better, yes.
Okay. I'm appearing today on behalf of the Minnesota Pollution Control.
We're having the same problem. I'm Judges Connolly and Broadfelder, is it the same for you?
I can't. It's garbled.
Is it better now?
Still garbled.
It's the same. Yes, it's the same as the system, but someone just ran me in a.
Yes, can you hear me better?
Oh, this is much, much better.
Okay.
All right, before you start, Ms. Brown, Mr. Lipford, as appellate attorney, if you'd remain on screen, please.
I apologize.
I just want to make sure that you're there and you're hearing what we're doing. All right. With that said, Ms. Brown, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Good morning. Again, apologies, Your Honor. My name is Christina Brown. I'm here appearing on behalf of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and may it please the court. This case addresses how far the right to religious freedom extends when that right poses a health risk to others. And in situations like this, laws like the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act allow the government to place limits on religious practices if the government can show two things. And the first is a compelling interest that supports denying the religious claimant an exemption from the challenge law. And second is that the law at issue is the least restrictive means of achieving that compelling interest. And here, after following the U.S. Supreme Court's directives on remand, through supplementing and expanding on its original fact findings, the district court again found that the government met its burden under RLUIPA. And in doing so, it didn't rely on speculation, but
on credible.
Ms. Brown,
do you agree that it's the same, as Mr. Lipford argues, that it's the same sort of, whether the constitutional claims have been preserved or not, it's the same general, it's the same analysis, basically?
I agree, Your Honor, that it is the same analysis for.
So you don't have to prove, they don't have to prove mulch basins work. You have to prove that they don't work and nothing else would work. Would that be a fair statement, Ms. Brown?
It is the government's duty to prove that the mulch systems will not work. That is correct. It is, I don't believe it's correct to say that we have to go out and try to invent and to fail to invent systems. That is not part of the strict scrutiny jurisprudence.
Could you repeat that last part again? I didn't quite get that.
Sure.
What don't you have to prove?
We do not have to go out and try to invent systems or try to, you know, we don't need to prove a negative to prove that, you know, we've tried to make these work and that they won't work. And I did want to address on
How do we know mulch basins don't work if there's been no soil testing? I mean, I get it. Your expert said mulch basins are horrible. And I agree, the California expert had her own issues, as I vividly recall the first go around 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. But the question now is, you know, without testing the mulch basins in this particularized interest for these Amish people in Fillmore County, how do we know that they don't work for sure? Because apparently for the last 13 years, and maybe we've been all lucky, I don't know, but for the last 13 years of this, you know, no one's been throwing up.
And a couple points to that, Your Honor. The first is, I think it's incorrect to say that no one has gotten sick from appellant's gray water. It's correct to say we don't have a documented case of that. And I think that's an important distinction. And that's not surprising.
Fair enough. But if we don't have it, well, I mean, you're right. There's no record evidence that somebody's thrown up. But I'm not so sure that gets you where you want to go. I mean, all the more reason, if there's no documented evidence of someone getting sick, how do we know that, you know, mulch basin plus won't work?
Well, let me turn to...
They've come up with mulch basins. Mm-hmm. Your expert says, generally speaking, mulch basins have all these problems, whether they do or they not, you know, the record's there. But for sure, if we tested, wouldn't we know for sure, oh my God, you know, it's either worse than we thought, better than we thought, or, you know, somewhere in between. What's the harm in that?
In this case, Your Honor, we did have an on-site inspection. County staff were on the ground inspecting these mulch basins, and there's a lot of photographic evidence in the
that had to do with, as I remember, the county people said that there was visual grayness as well as the olfactory evidence and smelling of sewage. But again, how does that equate with illness? And I know you can't prove a negative, but if there isn't any showing of illness, what difference does it make?
Again, Your Honor, we don't know what we don't know. And by the nature of groundwater, once appellant's water filters into the soil and connects to other groundwater resources, it's impossible to trace whose water is who. If I have two glasses of water and I pour them together and you say, okay, now separate that, I can't do that. And that's just by the nature of water itself.
You know, that's your problem, not the Amish's, in my opinion.
Well, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Your Honor, but I'm saying that—
Feel free to. I mean, it's just it seems to me a tie goes to the runner. You know, it's your burden to prove that you know, there is no least restrictive alternative and that the mulch basins don't work. And I'm not so sure, and I know what the experts say, but, you know, the proof is in the pudding. What's the harm in Mr. Lipford's suggestion at the last part of his brief is, let's try the mulch basins with all of these requirements? You know, you can inspect it till the cows come home, you can do the tests, you know, blah, 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 blah. What's the harm in that?
Well, and there was one point I wanted to get to, Your Honor, was that those suggested changes, those have already been addressed by the government's experts, or they've already been taken into account in terms of our septic regulations when the government's experts said these mulch systems aren't going to work. I note that inspections were objected
Have you tested to see if these mulch systems don't work for these Amish people? I mean, it seems to me that's the particularized, it's these folks here right and now. I mean, have you done that?
Well, as I said earlier, Your Honor, there was an on-site inspection. We have septic experts who viewed these systems, who saw backups, who saw the systems failing. There is, expert testimony regarding.
Say they're going to, mulch. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a mulch person. I mean, but what if the Amish said, we'll change the chips every day? We're hardworking.
Right.
And we'll, go ahead.
And there's expert testimony on that, Your Honor, that it is impossible to provide the level of maintenance to keep the system from failing. It's not a matter of hard work. I think we all agree the Amish are hard workers. We respect that. But there's expert testimony that due to the biodegradable nature of mulch, it absorbs water. It takes away oxygen. The likelihood of failure is so high. And we did see that failure in the in-person inspections that you can't physically do enough maintenance to make these work. And there's expert testimony about, we'll just make the mulch basins bigger. We already had an expert say that doesn't matter. Due to gravity, that water's going straight down and not, there's no magical pressurization component of mulch that's going to diffuse that water throughout the basin. And all the setbacks.
If you don't mind, I'd just like to follow up briefly if I could. So I'm interested in your, the on-site inspections that you're relying on. If I were to look in the record for the best expression of the results of that on-site inspection. I certainly see it reflected in the district court's decision. It's testimony, right?
And also photographic evidence. And I would ask the court
Photographic evidence. I mean, it's photos, a few photos taken on what, particular days and times?
Yes, Your Honor, but they show—
How many? I mean, do we have any data? That's the question that you're hearing, I think, from more than one judge on this panel is, does the government have any data to back up its position that the exemption that have been requested by these particular appellants on their property is an actual, greater hazard or fails to address the compelling interests that the government is advocating for, based public health as well as pollution? Do we have, and again, I'm talking about the mulch basin method.
Sure. And Your Honor, that part of that goes to some difficulty in terms of performing inspections during the underlying case. The government was allowed one on-site pre-announced inspection. We had to get permission from the district court to do that. And simply put, one water sample for a pre-announced inspection, that's not going to give us any more reliable data.
So the government sought more inspections and they were not allowed to do inspections? And that's in the record?
That is in the record. Fillmore County sought one that was denied. They sought a second. That one was granted. It needed to be done pre-announced so appellant's counsel could be there, that all the necessary parties could be there. And with sewage, Your Honor, it's a snapshot of any given day. So to do one sample, that's not going to give us a reliable empirical data set that we can use.
Well, but you're addressing exactly, I think, the concern that you're hearing from the court. So one sample is not enough. And is that all we have in the record?
Well, there's no water sample in the record, Your Honor, but it's the simple thing is it's not needed in this case because there's sufficient scientific evidence and expert testimony about how sewage is created here. By its very nature, humans are showering, they're bathing, they're shedding viruses.
Does whether the mulch basins work or not depend on how many gallons of water being used a day? And I assume if you use more gallons, it's worse. If you use less gallons, it's not as bad. Is that a fair statement?
I mean, you need to look at the amount of water that you're using. We do know that based on the appellant's usage, currently their systems failed. They all observed their systems fail. So we do know the water going into them was simply too much water. And to get to that 100-gallon piece, it's not a random guess. That was developed through multiple meetings between the county and the Amish about, okay, how many, you know, how are you carrying water in? How many loads of laundry are you doing? How many baths are you taking? How many people are in your home? I mean, this was, it wasn't a guess. It was a carefully discussed.
Where would I find the Amish agree it's 100 gallons a day? Where would I find that? I mean, I saw some, I didn't see the greatest testimony in the record, and it all seemed to be pre all this started, we all agreed on 100. Where do I find that that agreement or that the Amish agree it's 100?
And that number is discussed in one of the footnotes of the district court's order after remand. Off the top of my head, I do not remember that footnote number, but I'm happy to find that for the court. But it does discuss how that is the result of ongoing discussions between the county and the Amish community.
And how many people, the other thing is, you know, it's how many gallons, you know, times how many people. How do we know how many people are, you know, per farm? How do we know that?
Well, the only evidence in terms of number or family sizes, I believe, Your Honor, is for the appellants in this case. We knew at the time of trial there was 14, 12, or 14, 10, 8, or 7, and 6, I think around those numbers. I believe there's testimony from Emery Miller about his family, which is upwards of 10 people. We know based on the testimony of appellants and other community members, Amish have large families. I mean, that's proven by the record, Your Honor. So I don't have an exact number necessarily for every community or every household in the community, but we do know appellants' house sizes, and we know that the Amish have larger house sizes in general. And I did want to, you know, quickly point the court, because you've asked where we're going to find this, and I know it's photographic evidence, but there's two things I'd ask the court to look at. And the first is Exhibit 183. And the court may have already looked at these photographs, but I realized during preparation for this oral argument, my colleagues seem to think that gray water was opaque, or it was, you know, cloudy or like bath water. But if you look at Exhibit 183, that is a photo taken by the county, and that is what gray water looks like. It's black, it's foaming, there's slime, there's sludge. I mean, it's really, that is sewage, and that is what is getting put into these poor soil conditions, because there were soil tests done on appellant's properties and they were lacking the necessary unsaturated soil. So that is an issue, and it's getting put into this karst topography that's like Swiss cheese, and it's going down into our drinking water aquifers and integrating into our groundwater.
Counsel, your time is running out, and I just want to make sure I have your best thoughts on the record that we should look at. So you mentioned soil tests. There's also soil tests as exhibits that were submitted by the government.
A testimony from county employees, Your Honor, about the soil tests that were performed on appellant's properties.
I'd also before the mulch basins were installed, right?
I don't know the exact timing, Your Honor, because this was kind of at the same time where Almond Swartz and Trubel was installing a
brief, counsel, that suggests that the mulch basins weren't installed until about 6 months before trial. So you don't know what time frame these employees are testifying about.
Well, no, the soil tests were performed as part of an outhouse placement on Almond's property, which was during this time frame. I just don't have the exact month for you, Your Honor, is what I'm saying. But this was during the same time frame. And quickly, I also wanted to point the court to Exhibit 271. That's a list of all the store-bought products that appellants are using in their homes. And there are products like ringworm cream, antifungal cream. There are illnesses being treated into these homes, and there's scientific evidence in the record about how sewage is formed. I don't need to bring red and blue paint to the court today, respectfully, and combine them to show you that red and blue make purple. The scientific evidence in the record shows how sewage is made. We know appellants' water usage habits, the way that they're piping water into their homes. We know people are getting sick, and that water is getting put into poor soil.
How do we know people are sick again?
Well, Your Honor, if you look at Exhibit
27. Ms. Brown, you are out of time, but I do want you to answer Judge Connolly's question, and if Judge Bradfold has any others.
Sure. Your Honor, the government presented evidence that the district court found credible about how sewage is formed and how everybody, by their nature, sheds viruses and bacteria from their skin. And I know it's not an appellant's burden. I'm not saying it is, but if they wanted to provide evidence to rebut that, that they don't get sick or they don't shed viruses, trial was the time to do that. And like I said, they have on their list of products they're using every day, antifungal creams, ringworm creams, ibuprofen, all sorts of medications. There's no need for that if appellants and their families aren't experiencing conditions that need to be treated with those medications.
And unless any other questions?
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Brown, anything else?
No, Your Honor, I would just clarify the relief that MPCA is seeking, which is to affirm the district court's order as to RLUIPA and to clarify that the constitutional claims are no longer before the court.
Thank you. Mr. Lipford, back to you.
Thank you. One thing I'd like to clarify is the issue of inspections. Those were requests by the government to search the inside of the Amish's homes. And the express purpose was to find out what type of technology they were using in their attempts to essentially undermine their religious faith. And so the Amish did object to that. They didn't want the government searching the inside of their homes to try to look for what type of technology they use. And the district court agreed to that and granted an order allowing specifically to search the outside of the home. And so that was the objection was inside their homes. They have a right to privacy. And so that was the objection. The second I'd like to just point out as far as the government talking about the dark water, I think it's important for this court to realize that neither a septic tank nor a mulch basin treat gray water. It's the soil. And so it's the soil beneath those that does the actual treatment. And that's in the original district court order that talks about the water being displaced to the soil and the natural soil purification process. And so if you're to look inside a septic tank, crack open the lid and look in, you're going to find dark, smelly, disgusting water. That doesn't mean it's not being properly treated by the soil. And there's no specific evidence in this case that they never took water samples, didn't measure how far the wells are. Again, you don't have any of the specific evidence.
Thank you for going in that direction. So Council for Respondent talked about the soil tests that the government did, and that was in relation to installation of privies. Would you comment on that, please, what that evidence showed?
Sure. And so there's no objection to soil testing. And what I would state is the 3 feet of separation that was in the district court's order, that's required for privies. And so the exact same requirement.
Right, and it wasn't, as I remember the evidence, but I could be wrong, so you know it better than I do, that there isn't 3 feet of separation, at least on some of the appellant's properties. Is that correct?
That's not correct. Okay. All of them have operational privies. They have done the soil testing. And so that is simply not true. They have
so,
existing.
So what was the testing that the MPCA is referring to with regard to the privies? That it all showed 3 feet of separation, so it's all good for you? Or is there some part of that testing that you think is negative evidence that you might want to explain to us now?
Sure. And I think what they indicated was Almond Schwarzentruber. They said that an initial test was done and didn't realize where his current privy was done, didn't have the proper soil conditions. And so he does into his house. They've moved the privy to a new location. And also he's installed a gray water system, which again requires 3 feet of separation. So the 3 feet of separation is not something that's being objected to and can be demonstrably proven by the fact that they have privies.
So if I'm following you right, the soil testing did result in the move of a privy, but not that a privy wasn't able to be installed.
That's correct.
Okay.
With my remaining time, I'd just like to point out that one of the key things that the district court order ignored was variances. Fulton was about exemptions. It's clear that discretionary exemptions were a major key factor in the United States Supreme Court finding that essentially the government undermined its interests. And they do have variances, both at the state and the county level, to the SSTS requirements, and that was completely ignored by the district court.
So, counsel, if you don't mind, I'd like to connect that argument to what I see in the respondent's brief. They describe four alternative systems that are available and approved by the MPCA. I don't know that you have their brief in front of you, but you probably remember the chart, right? It's on page 7 of the respondent's brief. Are those the exact same alternatives that you're saying the district court ignored? Because I do see a discussion by the district court of these alternatives. And so I guess I'm not quite sure I'm following your argument, and I'm thinking I might misunderstand you.
Sure. And what it is the variance process that exists to those set of rules. And so both the state and the county allow variances in cases of hardship that allows exemption from those rules. And that was what was key in Fulton. And the exact same discretionary exemptions exist here, both at the state as well as the county level.
Is this the hardship variance that is not, the MPCA doesn't grant that, as I recall. It's the local authorities, am I right?
Yes, but there's a state regulation that states that exceptions or variances shall be issued by the local unit of government. And that's in our brief.
Any other questions, judges? Mr. Lipford, your time has expired, so I will deem that as your argument being concluded. Thank you both to Ms. Brown and Ms. Lipford for appearing again at the Court of Appeals regarding this matter. The matters were well briefed and well argued today. They are deemed submitted. A decision will be issued by this court in the statutory timeframe. Thank you.